My guest today is Iris Klassen. Iris, how are you?
Excellent, thank you.
It's good to see you. Thanks for being on our show.
I'm doing well, but I am excellent too.
Yes, you are excellent. Now hold your microphone a little bit closer because this room might get loud.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure we can drown them out.
Yep.
I saw your talk yesterday on Microsoft Band development.
Yes.
And it's so far, that's all I know about Microsoft Band development is what I saw on your talk. Can you show us your band?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm wearing a Microsoft Band 2. There is a Microsoft Band 1 and the Microsoft Band 2. Obviously, 2 is the latter one that came out not too long ago. And is I usually refer to it as a sensor band instead of a smartwatch, because it's not what you would expect in a smartwatch. It has a smaller screen, and it's a bit more limited in terms of what applications that you install on it can display, but they can still do a lot. But that will be happen more on the device that you're bringing with you, be that your phone or your laptop or, yeah, whatever.
Okay, so this is really kind of a dumb device here. A lot of the code that the applications are, it's just talking to the phone.
Yeah, it's more so the applications that you install on the band, they more allow for interaction with the application that you have installed somewhere else. I would do the majority of the work.
Okay.
So it will display notifications and messages and a little bit of data, and it's for interaction. But the application itself will be installed on another device, and that's how it usually works.
Sure.
And of course, there are the reason for this is because the majority of the battery goes towards all the sensors it has. It has a lot of sensors, more than any other band out there. The sensors?
Yeah, what sensors?
See if I can remember all of them. You have the accelerometer, you have the gyroscope, which is usually having
motion.
Yeah, and you get that in most smartwatches, so that's not so strange. You have a built-in GPS, an active GPS, which is really cool.
Yep.
You also have altimeter and barometer.
Okay, so altimeter says how high above sea level you are.
Yeah.
And barometer is just the pressure.
Yeah. And actually, you can do interesting things with that as well. You have skin temperature, which is very unusual. I don't know of any other smartwatch that has that.
Hmm.
And there's a lot you can do with that. You have a UV level sensor as well, which will let you know the level of exposure to ultraviolet light.
Interesting.
What more? You have, obviously, heart rate as well. Yeah. You have the RR intervals as well.
RR?
It's basically the distance between two peaks in the heart rate. It's I'm not very good at explaining it.
Okay.
It's only at rest. And it is often
the
used...
rest rate of your heart. How many beats per minute while you're resting?
Yeah, but it's not the same thing as a heart rate at rest.
Oh, it's not.
But... it's only accurate when used at rest.
Okay.
But talking about that is my favorite sensor as well, which is a galvanic skin response, which you can see the two dots up here on there and there.
Okay.
And I don't know of any other smartwatch or band or similar that has that. And that is a really, really cool sensor.
What does it measure?
So technically what it does, it measures the resistance between two points, hence why you got 2 points on it. And it's a way you can say sort of measure stress. It's called sympathetic arousal, which basically can be such as being startled, getting very anxious or worried, or can even measure if you get really excited and happy, but very strong like emotional response that you are even unaware of. And it has been used, I'm not saying that you should use it for this, but it's not uncommon to use GSR or galvanic skin response in suicide studies to detect people who have suicidal thoughts without them sort of being very aware of it.
Because it's a mood detector.
Yeah, sort of, but not like a mood ring. So it's beyond the mood ring.
Okay.
So when you have a response like that, basically the resistance between the 2 points is going to decrease. And that's, you can see it as a, not a spike, as a more of a valley, and you can see a difference. And I tested this, I wrote all the readings to a comma-separated file when I went snowboarding, and I had just injured my knee quite severely.
So did it change rapidly?
I wanted to see, like, how do you test something? Like, how do you give yourself a response you're unaware of?
Giving it up for your research.
Yeah, so I silver taped my knee. I went up to the top of the hill, and I went snowboarding, and afterwards I could see exactly where my snowboard slid a little bit, and where I remember that I had this reaction, and I could see it, and that is really fascinating.
It'd be cool to do it again and record. I took a video coming down the hill with this graph alongside.
There are
it.
Sensors that you can place on your head that will pick up on different facial expressions
maybe
as well.
A GoPro camera at the same time.
I do have one. That's actually a really good idea. Yeah. I should use my GoPro for that.
Tell me about the process of actually building applications. Are you writing them in C Sharp?
You can actually choose. So this is a cross-platform device, and there are applications for it. You can use it both with Android, iOS, as well as Windows Phone or any Windows device that runs either Windows 8 or Windows 10 up. And there are libraries available for developers both in Java, in Objective-C, so native libraries, as well as, of course, the ones for C#. And there are also Xamarin extensions that you can use if you want to write a cross-platform application for Microsoft Band. And that's really cool, and I really appreciate it. I really wish more companies that produce the smartwatches would have native libraries available for other developers to use and also support other platforms besides their own.
When you write these applications, are you writing them to be deployed to the band, or are you writing them to be deployed to a phone?
You write applications to be deployed to the phone or the device you have with you. Mm-hmm. And most commonly, most often, you have it as well on the band. Okay. But you don't have to. But usually you want to have, you have something called tiles connecting to your music. No, don't do that. So you have your tiles here. I'm trying to scroll. And these are the applications. And you can have a little bit of information. And you can, basically you can display a little bit of information. And you can also interact with the application by having buttons. Now, the reason most people have a sort of tile that you want to give some feedback on whatever data you are collecting.
Sure.
But you don't have to do that. Basically, the sensors are streaming the whole time. And when you create your application, you just decide which of the events or sensors you want to listen to. And then you receive that information. Then it's up to you what you want to do with it.
Well, help me understand this. So let's take the was the galvanized response.
Yeah.
Let's say I wanted to track that, and I wanted to send the information back to maybe this is a patient.
Yeah.
And I want to check if they're going to be at risk for suicide, as you mentioned before, and they've got a nurse somewhere in the institution that's tracking that.
And we're not doctors, and we're not recommending anything.
But that would be useful thing for a doctor to have that information in real time. That code would it get deployed both to here and to the phone, or is it just the phone is polling this device?
I would have it just on the phone and just be polling the sensor data.
I see.
But if I wanted to display it to the user, for example, your average has been this, or spikes detected, or something like that. Or for example, if you were to use galvanic skin response for people who have strong emotional reactions, and they do cognitive behavioral therapy, so they want to analyze the situation, and it's hard to remember it after the fact.
Right.
You could maybe give a haptic feedback or vibration response to the user. You just had a significant change in your galvanic skin response.
Okay.
So this might be a situation where you want to stop and think about it and go through your usual cognitive behavioral therapy thinking, and also dialectical behavioral therapy, which is like a very hands-on way to handle strong emotions.
Okay, I like that. So the device or the phone could also be pushing information out to here, so it could display it.
I could imagine
maybe an insulin pump. You'd want to know if it went outside a certain range. You'd want that to display immediately in real time, so you could make adjustments without pulling your phone out.
Yeah, exactly. That's really interesting. A friend of mine, Jonas, he has diabetes type 1, mm-hmm. and he has one of the new NFC implants in his arm, changes it every 3 months, and has a range to like 4 or 5 meters, which is insane for NFC. It's really cool. So NFC is not a sensor. It's a communication protocol, but the device itself, you can call it a sensor.
Uh-huh.
And what would be really cool if the application he has is only to get the readings and read them. I don't think they have any like warning system, but that would be really handy for him to have.
But you could write that warning system that went outside.
Yeah, I could.
Ranges.
I've actually asked him to put one of those in my shoulder, and he said yes. Yeah, I haven't, in the arm somewhere, but I haven't done it yet. But he's going to do that because I want to compare our data, and I want to hack it and see like what I can do with the data, which is really, really cool.
Very cool.
So there's a lot of use for it in terms of health-wise, beyond just counting steps. And
right.
Yeah, we got to stop doing that. Like, does anybody care how many steps you take?
It's not a lot of people do.
Yeah, but I don't get. It's just a number. It's just a number.
I had a friend visiting a couple months ago, and I said, hey, I'll give you a ride to this. They wanted to go visit somewhere in Chicago. I'll give you a ride. No, I need another 600 steps.
Oh, come on. He just wants to play Pokemon Go, right?
This was before Pokemon Go, but there was another contest.
Yeah.
So if people wanted to get started developing for the band, where would they go?
Well, first of all, you need to have the device.
That's a question. Do I need the device? Is there an emulator that I can use?
There's no emulator.
Okay.
I've seen somebody is posting online that there might be a simulator type.
Okay.
I haven't tried it myself. I'm working on a simulator. But I've said that for a year, and I still haven't published it officially. So I need to do that. So
you will need this device, which is a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah. It's quite cheap considering what it does,
right.
but it's good, and I'm quite pleased with it. So you need that one. You need to be registered as a Windows developer if you're going to develop for Windows, which is very easy to just sign up. And then you need to register the device you're going to deploy to when you do your testing as well. And then if it's a Windows phone, you need to register that. If it's Android, you've got to go about getting all the drivers. And if you're an Android developer, you know the drill. It's a long one. And the same thing if it's iOS. So you just set it up. You download the library. You can use NuGet if you're writing in C# to grab the library. And from there on, it's quite a straightforward way.
Very nice. Do you have an online presence?
I have an online presence. I tend to say all my friends are online. Twitter is usually where I'm at, where all the cool kids are.
What's your Twitter handle?
It's Iris Klasson.
Iris, thank you so much.
Thank you. It wouldn't surprise me if it's this part right now you were to use instead of me actually saying something about technology and friends, because this would be way more interesting, right?